Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
What's going on, my friends and listeners and amigos and amigas? I am Jack Allen with another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence, a.k.a. Kojak. A.K.A. Kojak with a question mark. I don't know, I'm running out of ideas, but I'm Jack Allen. Go follow me at Kojak Podcast, Twitter, Instagram. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, Conspiracy or JEC Jack Allen, and I'll change that to Kojak. I'll do that tomorrow. But yeah, go follow. I have my link tree, all my links. You want to support the show, Venmo, Patreon, you know it. If you want to support, thank you. If you can't, thank you for listening. I do this because I love it. I've met so many amazing people in this community. We rock, dude. We are the counterculture. We are the dissidents that the big government, big media all want to shut down. Because you want to know why? Well, you guys know why. Because we ask questions we don't blindly believe. And that is something that you should be so proud of. And I'm going on a tangent, but I'm going to finish it right here. Weak people, people that lack confidence, people that can't be away from the group because they're afraid people will laugh at them. That's the public. That's 90%, 95% of the world. But we are this small, infinitesimal amount, a percentage of people that are brave enough to be ridiculed, that are brave enough to say, dude, this makes zero sense. You've lied to me. I don't believe a word you say. And it takes courage to go against the grain, to be against the group. And that's all of you. So be proud of yourself. You are truly an amazing person. You are such a, we are such a small percentage, and we grow by the numbers each day, but you should be really proud of that. But yeah, so go follow me, blah, blah, blah. So today's episode, I had Don Jeffries on. We talk UAPs, which is unidentified aerial phenomenon, the new name for UFOs. We talk, Ukraine. We talk his newest book. We talk Lincoln. We talk, oh, awesome stuff. It was such a good show. The chat was awesome. Thank you guys for coming in the chat. I always love when you're there. And go follow Don. He's on Twitter, and I'll put all these links in the show notes. Don's books, I'm telling you guys, I say in the intro for the show, but he was one of the first, like, conspiracy. I remember getting his book for Christmas. I was so excited to read it. And that was my first episode, was on his book. He opened my mind to so much stuff about the Civil War and pre-Civil War and the conspiracies that went on and all this stuff like that. So you need to go buy his books. He's got a book on sale right now for like $1.99. Just buy it. If instead of supporting my show, go buy that, because he is such an amazing author and he's so great. So enjoy the show. Go follow Don. Tomorrow we are finishing the history of central banking. It's Russia. And how Imperial Russia, dudes, it just beat the hell out of everything. How amazing it was, and how what usury did do it. And then we talk a little bit about like the Bank of International Settlements and all this stuff like that. So final episode, it's going to be a good one. It's going to be fun. So I hope to see you guys tomorrow at 8:30. And that's it. So I'm Jack Allen with Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I love you guys. God bless. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you tomorrow. Take care. What is going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. So today I said this last time, but one of my favorite authors. If you actually, my first episode, I do not recommend you go listen to it, but it was off this man's book, Don Jeffries. Don, thanks for coming back on the show. And how are you doing today?
Oh, pleasure to be here, Jack. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I know I tell you that all the time. If you looked back at our old episodes, that intro is probably the same exact thing I said every time. But I do mean it when I say that.
I can't protest against that. Who doesn't like to hear those kind of nice things?
there's so many things to talk about that I would love to hear your opinion on. But I saw your most recent tweet was about the UAP Congress meeting. And I would love to hear what your thinkings are on the whole thing.
Well, you know, when I was back in a wayward youth many decades ago, next to the JFK assassination, my number two seed as far as books that I was reading constantly would be about UFOs. UFOs, the Bermuda Triangle, Pyramid Tower, Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, all that stuff. Cryptozoology, you know, I was really into that stuff. Charles Ford later. But so I'm very familiar with the literature, and one day I'll probably write a book on this, you know, mysterious phenomenon too. But I'm so familiar with that. I understand how people who had seen, and you know, I'm talking about probably millions of people around the world who have seen these crafts. I don't believe them. I haven't believed for a long time from outer space, but they're real. Definitely seeing something. And so it's a phenomenon, but they were ridiculed. Were scoffed at. They're much like we see whistleblowers in politics. Many times their families scorned them. Their marriages broke up. They were left with physical injuries many times, strange burns and things, because these craft. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that's part of it, you know, and it's undeniable. But so in the last couple of years, suddenly a story comes out in the New York Times, I think 2019, something like that, and suddenly giving this subject credibility out of nowhere. And now they're looking at videos that the pilots and the military took, which pilots and the military have been taking videos of these things for decades. They scoffed at them and made fun of them. The Air Force covered it up. Now suddenly they're giving this credibility. It's on Tucker Carlson all the time. Now Congress is having hearings about it. Obviously my spidey sense is going off. My radar is up. I don't believe for a second that they suddenly came to a belated realization that maybe we shouldn't have made fun of those guys. But you know, I'm familiar with Project Bluebeam. I'm familiar, you know, with the idea of a fake alien invasion. So I hope they're not planning that, but they've thrown everything else at us in the last couple of years. So a fake alien invasion wouldn't really surprise me that much. And I think they may be cooking that up.
So I think we're on the same. I was just like you. Aliens were like what brought me into. I mean, who doesn't love the aliens and Bigfoot? Sure. And, I mean, that is like, and that's the fun stuff. Ever like you get a lot of people that are like conspiracy curious with that. That's like a good. But so when you said you don't believe in them anymore, what did you mean by that?
No, I don't believe that they're extraterrestrial. I haven't for a long time. I believe they're definitely real. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are some kind of phenomenon, but again, knowing what I know in terms of how the elite operate and, you know, because if you look at the reports and again, I had a book called The Humanoids, which is a great compilation of encounters, probably written about 1980 or so.
Okay.
Of people who had close encounters. And actually, I was more interested in that than just people that saw lights. Because they can, you know, they can always explain that as a planet Venus, which they usually did.
Right.
But it's a little harder when your people are telling you they're interacting with these creatures. And most of the time, more often than not, the creatures were human beings. They just described, you know, regular looking guys, but they just came in this strange craft. And you know, a lot of times they spoke English, you know, well. But so you know, well, what's going on here? But the overall agenda was pretty clear, where they were constantly stressing when they did see these creatures. There was an overriding emphasis, like what you saw in the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still in 1951, of, you know, human, you know, we're dangerous. Our nuclear weapons are dangerous. We're going to blow the planet up. So we're here to lecture you. You know, Earthlings must stop war, you know. And so that was whether they're trying to get America to disarm. I don't know. But so I suspect if anybody saw these creatures today, they'd probably be warning about climate change, I'm guessing. You know? I think it's a politically correct message. So the message was just too, you know, it was too constant. And the fact that they always appeared to like people in remote locations so they could, you know, people wouldn't necessarily believe them. And but again, I believe that they saw something. But again, mm-hmm. I think it was a part of some giant psyop. And I think it's my point is being proven now because nothing has changed to make them suddenly take this stuff seriously. But we know about Project Bluebeam, which actually doesn't involve just a fake alien invasion. Project Bluebeam also involves a mock second coming of Christ, which we ought to fear more than that.
Wait, what did you say? What is it? What does it also have? What'd you say?
It involves a mock second coming of Jesus Christ as well.
No way.
Yep. And we know the CIA already really seriously considered doing that in the early 1960s. There was a project that seriously considered having a giant hologram of Jesus Christ.
No to be, way.
Shown outside the shores of Cuba. Cuba is a very Catholic country.
Right.
And they thought that was one way to control them. So they didn't do it, but they, you know, this is one of the projects they were considering. So I think they incorporated all that into Project Bluebeam. I don't think they would do that. I think, again, I think they're more likely to do the alien invasion, but I don't even know if they'll do that. But there's got to be a reason why they're suddenly, you've ridiculed these. It would be very similar to if all of a sudden you had the mainstream media saying, well, you know, of course Oswald didn't do it. You know, out of nowhere, you know, when they've been ridiculing people forever. And that's at that level, you know, suddenly say, yeah, of course, you know, UFOs should be taken seriously. Well, why weren't they taken seriously for the last, 70 years? You know, since what's different now?
And I'm sorry to keep, but why don't you believe in aliens anymore?
Well, I have doubts. You know, I have doubts about space. I have doubts about our reality. And I believe, you know, I had a guy, a flat earth guy on my show last
week. I saw, that's why I'm bringing this up. Cause I saw on your saw.
Yeah, I mean, so, and you know, I people ask me, I don't know what I believe, but I do know I have serious doubts that we're on a giant spinning ball and I don't trust science. I, you know, my study of the Apollo missions, I pretty much just convinced me we definitely didn't go to the moon. So, you know, they're lying about a lot of stuff. And I used to be a huge fan of astronomy. I used to follow the space program a lot as a little kid. I knew all their names. I knew very knowledgeable about it. So look at my telescope and try to see the moons of Jupiter and all that, the rings of Saturn, all that. And so it was hard for me to break away from that. But I think that, you know, just the fact that we're being lied to about everything, and that's why I'm open-minded. And as I've told people, you know, why would you think that they're lying to you about everything else, but they're telling you the truth about the nature of reality of our world? And so I'm open to hollow earth, flat earth, whatever, it's a computer simulation. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of it, I'm open to any of it, because I think the reality they've constructed, the Big Bang evolution thing, is designed to take God out of the equation. It's also designed to minimize the value of every human life, because it makes us into just a random set of genes that really is not important at all. We're like worker bees, you know, in an ant colony or something. And, you know, so it takes, I think, the special equation out of what I think human life is special. And so I resent, you know, being, you know, claimed I'm just a speck or something.
Absolutely.
I think that's what they're trying to do.
I like it. So I'm sure you're familiar with Ken Ami, but Ken had he brought that up a long time ago. He told me how it's interesting that alien encounters, they always have like a few messages: peace on earth, you know, stop fighting, a one world government, a one world religion. So it's, you know, what are the coincidences that these aliens, they have the same beliefs as the NWO does, or all these elite.
Earthlings, you must stop. You must sacrifice your hot shower and SUVs. Climate change, you know. Stop racism now. The universe is very upset with white supremacy, you know.
Right. So you're not a fan of David Wilcock or Corey Good?
No. Somebody who's, when I was reading about UFOs, even when I still kind of was open to the extraterrestrial, hypothesis, I was already starting to turn to the books of Charles Fort. And, you know, I think they're some of the greatest books ever written, Book of the Damned, Low, you know. Mm-hmm. And Fort was very skeptical about everything, but he was the only man of his time, and really any time, that was, because he was a kind of a mainstream guy. They had the Fortean Society that was a lot of big writers at the time, because he was so brilliant, supported him. But he's the one that just really just kind of deconstructed science. He would make fun of the astronomers and show how wrong they were on all their predictions back then. I mean, they were wrong constantly. And right. they would just, you know, make up absurd excuses the same way they would now, because they're wrong constantly now. I mean, meteorologists are wrong all the time. So I don't have respect for people because they're not special. And the last scientist that I would have had respect for was the great Nikola Tesla. Since then, not so much. Bill Nye, the non-science guy. Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'm not taking advice from those guys. I think I know about what's going on than they do.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree. And I think you bring up a good point, though, like how it was mocked incessantly for years, for decades. And then now, ever since that Commander Fravor, he was on Joe Rogan. I think that's his name, Commander Fravor. But that video of I forget what they called that. That's the UFO or whatever. But that was that, you know, it was everywhere and it was being accepted. And anytime, just like you said, the media accepts or pushes a narrative immediately, you can guarantee it's probably a lie or a stretch of the truth or whatever.
Right. And those I haven't seen any videos that were any more impressive than the ones I saw back in the 70s or the 80s, you know, home videos or home movies or certainly photographs. And none of that was ever good enough. Back then, they just scoffed at it. No, and you had airline pilots back then. You had lots of military personnel. You had a guy, I can't remember his name. I used to remember all this minutiae. Some guy that Unsolved Mysteries had a story about him, probably back in the 60s, 70s, that disappeared while he was he was reporting. You know, he saw one of these huge craft, and he was like, he was trying to get away from it, and you know, they just poo pooed it and shoved it down the memory hole, and now. We're supposed to believe that this is maybe they'll start talking about, you know, Roswell, the alien autopsies and all that. Again, all this stuff they ridiculed, maybe now they'll you know, just open up about that.
Well, isn't the first, I think the first like mainstream alien sighting was in 47, right? Yes. Before the CIA started. It was an OSS guy. It was some
Kenneth Arnold. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you know better. Yeah. And they found he was like his buddy was on a boat or whatever. Like the whole story was. All surrounded with feds, like you know, or intelligence officers.
It was, and that's the first modern. He's the one that gave birth to the term flying saucer to the like flying saucer, and that was the modern age. But you had again Charles Fort documented many before that. He didn't call them UFOs because they haven't invented the term yet. But he was definitely describing them. And then you had one of my favorite topics, the great airship mystery of 1896. Where you had all across the country, people reported seeing this kind of a Zeppelin type craft, of which of course hadn't been invented yet, and they called them Eric ships. And you had scores of sightings all across the country, and you had people. It landed, and you had people interacting with their human. They were absolutely human. In fact, the one guy kept giving his name, his last name, and it was the same to witness. I've forgotten the details. If I write a book about it, I'll get it. But it's a look it up. It's a great airship. I think it was 1896. So this stuff has been going on, and it's all part of, you know, the type of phenomena that Charles Fort discovered, which is, you know, the balls from the sky of, you know, toads and blood and fish and rocks, lizards, things like that, that have happened for a long time, and science just completely covers it up and makes up nonsensical excuses. So I think, you know, there's a lot about our world that we don't know, you know, and that's why I think I resent science so much, because science pretends that it does know. And their entire thing, they ridicule the Garden of Eden, they ridicule creation by a creator, but they're telling us that everything began with a giant ball that just came from nowhere and then it exploded and created the universe. I mean, come on. And you really think that's more logical, more scientific?
Well, there was the Who Built the Moon. Have you ever read that? I think Alan, David Icke used to reference him a lot, but he says like how the moon, like the chances of the size, the where it's low, all the mathematical like numbers, like, you know, it's 1/40th the size of the sun. So it looks but it's 40 times closer than the sun. So they look the same, all these things. They just like it's the perfection of it is just, it's one in trillions, the odds of this happening.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess what I think, you know, either you have a creator, a perfect creator that can do that, or, you know, yeah, some They built it. It's artificial, you know. I mean, they used to say, used to have a lot of astronomers that thought that there was a whole school of thought that Mars, the two moons there, Deimos and I can't remember, Deimos
Phobos, I think.
Yeah, Phobos. Yeah, that a lot of people, that used to be a sub thought group there that that they were artificial.
Interesting.
And the, you know, the satellites, but you know, I don't know. Again, there's so much up there that. But I now having, you know, the way I look at the world now, like I said, you know, is space just a giant myth? I don't know. Because I was telling the flat Earth guy, although he, you know, I said, you know, he went right to flat Earth.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's not that much of a step. Once you realize that we didn't go to the moon and they're lying to you about that, then, and once you really analyze what's going on in the space station, which never goes anywhere near space, well, the space station, it doesn't go anywhere near space. And if it's even up there, you know, people right. believe it's not even there. It's all fake. But you look at their absurd videos, you know, the women's hair standing up like Bride of Frankenstein and just ridiculous stuff that, you know, where do they go to the bathroom when they're up there for months? Where does all that go? Is it all really floating around in space? I mean, you ask the logistics. If you question that, and they just, you know, they don't want to hear that because they don't want people questioning the narrative. But there's a lot to question there.
I totally. So my last, before we get to like the mainstream topics, I'm bringing this up because you mentioned airships and that's a big theory in Tartaria. So I wanted to get your take on, because I respect your opinion literally so much. I'm sure you're familiar with the Tartaria theory and all this stuff like that. Airships are big in that theory. That's why I'm bringing this up. But
well, you'll have to familiar. I've heard that, of Tartaria, but I don't know much about it. What exactly?
Well, just all the old beautiful architecture that we have that was built up until 1850. It was from a previous or knowledge that we've lost or previous global civilization. And
I haven't heard it called Tartaria, but I'm familiar with it because we have so many things that certainly the Great Pyramid. They tell you they can't build it now.
Yes.
Yeah, so how, you know, how do they carry you know, stones that weighed tons, you know, back in those days over bodies of water and stuff. And slaves, you know, thousands of slaves over 20 years. And there were some really impressive slaves. and again, I think things like the Nazca lines in Peru, they can only be seen from a great height.
Yeah.
I mean, they're figures, very intricately drawn figures, but they mean nothing if you're on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, again, does it really take that much thought? Question. Yeah. Well, obviously, somebody must have been seeing them from a height. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and there's lots of evidence in the record there, and it they found ancient batteries. They found little figurines that look exactly like modern aircraft. They found things like bullet holes in dinosaurs. Supposedly, you know, that kind of thing, bullet holes and cavemen. But they just, you know, these things just get thrown out because, you know, and that's what Charles Fort called the dam, wrote the book of the dam, they don't fit in. So they're damned. And so they basically throw them down the river. There's a lot we don't know. And these jokers, these are the same people that conspire against us all the time. And they're up to political subterfuge. So I'm sure not going to believe anything they have to say about the nature of reality.
Right. Yeah. And just like all these or AAA, American Historical Association, medical, all of them are started by the same Rockefeller funded.
Yeah.
You know, so there's very little truth that's, if any, coming out of mainstream sources. But so to change topics, you are the Civil War master, in my mind, at least. I think many would agree. But I'm on like a 3-part series of the history of central banking. And basically it starts from Roman times to like current times of how usury has destroyed just enslaved humanity essentially. And he brought up after your book that I was a big, you know, anti-Lincoln guy, and I still kind of am, but he brought up this point about how Lincoln, and you mentioned this in your book, he put out the greenbacks, which were going to help, you know, it's not good for central banking. So why would Lincoln, as a tyrant, a guy who went way above his power level, he changed the presidency, why would he do something good? I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It is kind of an anomaly there. And you know, before I started hating on Lincoln, when I actually looked at his record, you know, when I was just looking at his assassination, yeah, I thought, and I've seen that quote from the London Times supposedly or something about if this mischievous financial policy of printing the Green Books, basically it's so dangerous that person will be the most, that country will be the most, basically it's basically saying he had to be killed. But I've never been able to source it. You know, it's quoted in a lot of books, and I can't find the original source for it. They say it was in some newspaper, but I can't find. I even wrote to the to someone in England trying to find if they had a record of this old. Then there's no record of it. So I don't know if that really happened. But on the surface, certainly looks like he was really going after the bankers. But Lincoln's whole career contradicts that because he was a banker's man.
Right.
You know, he's always supported a central bank. So why he did this, I suspect it was more of a personal thing where he, for whatever reason, he was upset at the way it was being financed, or maybe they wanted to, you know, suddenly charge him higher interest or something. And he just said, you know, F it. But I don't know. I'm just speculating because Lincoln's entire career is contradicted by that. But
right.
Maybe he had an epiphany and he decided to, he felt guilty about all the tyranny he was throwing on people. I really don't know, but he, and certainly, you know, he was killed, you know, after that. And that's the only reason I can see why they would have killed him, because he had been doing,
exactly,
doing their bidding. So,
yeah,
you know, it's possible. And of course, you know, then one of the things Lincoln and Kennedy had in common that aren't, you know, usually they come up with a bunch of fakes that they have in common, like, you know, assuming Booth and Oswald did it. But in this case, you know, Kennedy did print silver certificates as well, which was, you know, very close to the greenback, and you know, he was assassinated shortly after that too. So that's one thing they do have in common.
And then I agree with, I think, I don't, you know, the speculation is maybe he had a change of heart, maybe he said, Jesus, I am slaughtering women and children for what. But then he wrote a Jesuit book, Tupper Saucy, and he taught, have you ever, I don't know if you've ever read his, it's a good one, but he brings up the point that the South was funded by the Jesuits and by the Catholic Church. And so I just wanted your take on why would, again, I know you're going to have to speculate, but why would the Jesuits be against a guy that's leading to more of a, you know, a global or a, all the power in one position, taking rights, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know, the reason why everything I write about, you know, I never point the finger at any group because and the Jesuits are kind of a quasi-Jewish group in terms of, if you read what people that think it's the Jesuits that are behind everything, almost word for word, these are the things that have been said about Jews. Mm-hmm. Very, very similar. And so, you know, a lot of the people that you described, that, you know, the Jesuits are plotting this, and the Catholic Church, whatever. And the Jesuits, you know, although they're really not, the Catholic Church is kind of different, separate from the Jesuits, but the Jesuits is kind of a more radical sect. But, you know, so I wouldn't, you know, a lot of people, and I'm very well aware that in the Lincoln assassination, a lot of people think the Jesuits killed him. That's one of the most popular theories. But, you know, I think it was an inside job. I think it was, you know, his Secretary of War, Stanton, who was a psychopath.
Right.
For whatever reason, they engineered it. And, you know, the other version is maybe Lincoln really did mean to not treat the South as harshly. Maybe they wouldn't have had the terrors of Reconstruction with him. I don't know. It's possible. But that could be it, that, they, you know, they didn't want that. They wanted him further punished. If you throw the greenback thing in there, maybe that's what, you know, why they killed him. But he certainly looked like he'd been doing their bidding. And anyway, you look at it, he transformed the presidency for the worse and set all these awful precedents. And, you know, I mean, it's hard for me even still writing about Lincoln, because Lincoln, I used to love Lincoln. I read tons of stuff on him, and I was into his conspiracy for a long time. I thought he was a good guy, and they knocked him off because of that. And then I started, you know, reading Thomas DiLorenzo's books and looking at the other sides.
Check that out.
Oh yeah, he's Lincoln Unmasked, the real Lincoln. He's really the guy that started the modern kind of revisionist look on Lincoln, and he got a lot of play. He was on C-SPAN. I think he was on a couple of shows. The court historians really, you know, went after him, and but you know, he's the one that pointed out the He also has written some good stuff on Jefferson and Hamilton too. And he used to correspond with me. Now I keep trying to get him on my show. He won't answer me anymore. I don't know. He thinks I'm too radical. I said, I talk you up all the time, dude. I mean, on Coast to Coast, I've mentioned him. I always say he's an influence, but I don't know. It's not enough to get an answer from him.
What is your and then I want to talk about more current events, but what is your take on the founding? Like, I'm at this point where I think I told you last show, I've like been gravitating to thinking a monarchical form of government might have been the best. And so at the founding fathers, I'm just like struck because clearly maybe like some of them had good intentions, but so many were Freemasons. So many were deists. Right. I mean, clearly like they made things clear, but also in a way that maybe they thought it was clear enough. I don't know. But things clearly, this republics clearly do not work out. If you want a solid, I mean, they're every one of them has failed. So what is your take like on the founding? Were they good guys? Were they wanting the best or was it a scam?
Well, I'm biased because as a little kid, I fell in love with that era of history.
Yeah.
And I still have something in my heart. I mean, I'm aware of the Deist thing. I'm aware of the Freemasons and the prevalence of that. And even somebody like Thomas Jefferson, who I really love and still adore, I'm aware that he had a dark side too. You know, he was sympathetic to Adam Weishaupt, the
Illuminati. No way. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he just thought because Jefferson was, you know, I think he was a believer in God. I'm not sure, but Jefferson like rewrote the Bible with his stuff.
Yes,
you know, that kind of ridiculous stuff. So he was a real too much, maybe, you know, incredible free thinker, but Weishaupt looked at as somebody that was maybe going to, just was a free thinker himself. And he was poking holes in organized religion, which he hated, and in the state. So I guess he thought that was a good thing. He didn't really understand what the conspiratorial implications were, but you know, I probably would have been on the side of, people that I, you know, like Patrick Henry, and initially George Mason and Thomas Paine and Jefferson, who none of them supported the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And because they thought the article, and I've, you know, I've gotten to discussions with many people that the Articles of Confederation actually were probably better, superior than what we had. But the only thing that made the Constitution, as the Constitution developed, once you put that Bill of Rights in there, and you have the separation of powers, if they had actually been separated and it worked the way they're supposed to, then I think it's about as perfect a form of government as you could have. I mean, I'm sympathetic to the anarchy position too, because, you know, all authority appears to be corrupt. And as a populist, the essence of populism is we're against giving too much power concentrated in any one place. And the separation of powers really addresses that, because the idea was really great of Madison's to have three separate and equal branches that would check each other, checks and balances. Mm-hmm. And the Bill of Rights protected, you know, because it did give this, you know, the Articles of Confederation people thought that, you know, the Constitution gave the central government too much power. But, you know, look at it compared to now. I mean, you know, it was really stripped down. It had very few functions. Ironically, regulating money and regulating money and printing and regulating money, the value thereof, one of the few functions that they've never done.
Right.
They gave that to a private corporation, the Federal Reserve, eventually did. And, you know, I'm finishing up Hidden History 3, more from the Orwellian American memory hole. Yeah, that's – so I'm pretty much done. I'm just putting finishing touches on it and then send it to the publisher and hope they'll publish it. If not, I'll have to find alternatives. But I'm going back into the Founding Fathers there and a lot of stuff, a lot of JFK, 9/11, Oklahoma City, a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Lincoln, more Lincoln. More,
oh, I love it, dude. I love it. I can't wait.
But I discovered in there that,
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. You know, Jefferson, you know, another reason to love him is that he was really the first and maybe only opponent, high-profile opponent of judicial review, and that's the first shattering wasn't – Lincoln wasn't actually the first one to shatter the checks and balances. That was John Marshall, who the first Supreme Court Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He just decided to take on this function for the judiciary of a judicial review where they were going to review all questions regarding the Constitution. That was not their purpose, and Jefferson was incensed about that. And they were not supposed to have that big of a role. And of course, what that led to is what we see, you know, eventually, you know, you're talking about by 1973 or whatever it was, then you had something like Roe versus Wade, which is the culmination of that, where you had them interpreting something that was not even mentioned in the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution about it. The founding fathers couldn't even envision something like that. And that's what you get. And then you have things like, you know, something like when the people do get it up amongst themselves to pass a good referendum, like a Proposition 187 back in the early 90s in California passed, which would have denied government benefits to illegal aliens, which would have been a great way to get self-deportation going, since immigration authorities weren't doing it. If you deny them benefits, there's going to be a lot of people deporting themselves.
Yes.
And what happens? It goes to a federal judge, just takes it and throws it out. And that's judicial review. And people in both sides support it. The conservatives support it because they're hopeful they'll get a judge that'll help them. Mm-hmm. It's not the way it's supposed to work. And, you know, power to the people. So referendums, things like that could be great to try to circumvent some of the stuff, but not if it's going to be subject to judicial review. So I'm fighting that judicial review concept with all I can, but it's so ingrained now in our culture. So that was the first corruption of what I think was a great system. And then, of course, the second corruption was when the executive branch under Lincoln usurped all the authority. You became the imperial president, trampled all of the Constitution, and no one really objected. And the greatest, you know, the secular saint of our civilization. So
I like
he's
that.
He's a fitting saint for this, you know, kind of this crumbling civilization, because he's the one that set us down this path. And then he started all the precedents that you would see later in Woodrow Wilson, Franklin D. Roosevelt, all the modern presidents. And if anybody, like right now, if anybody would question them about the January 6th political prisoners, which is an outrage, but it harkens back to what Lincoln did when he arrested all those Northern prisoners. And so if anyone, but you're not having any opposition, there is no ACLU, the ACLU's not saying anything, nobody's saying anything. But if they did mount a legal challenge, that would be their defense. They would cite the precedents of Lincoln. Now, it's an insurrection. This is an insurrection, and they probably win in court because our courts are completely corrupted.
Well, so that's, I know, I want to talk, but that's why, like, this happened in Rome. You know, the Republic started out great. They had honest senators who represented their people. And with, it just seems to be, whether it's just human nature or it's by design, republics get corrupted. And Caesar saved Rome for a little bit. You know, and that this story just repeats itself over and over again, where the Republic gets corrupted. And that's why I'm very disillusioned with, democracy and republics.
I don't blame you. It's very disillusioning, but that's why the only way, you know, like Jefferson said, you know, need to bind man down with chains, you know, from the Constitution, because he's going to cause a lot of mischief, as he called it. If you give them too much power. You had Lord Acton, one of the great minds of the 19th century, Lord Acton from England, great populist, who was a good friend of Robert E. Lee, by the way, and was rooting for the Confederacy in the Civil War. And that's the side liberty was on. And he's the one that came up with one of the great sayings of all time, and that's power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. More power you give anyone. And that's why I say it wouldn't matter if you, me, Thomas Jefferson, anybody, you can't give any Huey Long, my all-time hero. You can't give any one person or any one group, any one organization, any one thing too much power. You have to have something to check it. So I think the founders really came up with something brilliant to have three separate and equal branches that could check each other. And if they functioned right, they would. The problem is judicial took on too much authority right away. the executive kind of goes back and forth. You know, every president that's ranked highly is an imperial president.
Right. Absolutely.
Trample.
How does that happen?
Exactly. The court historians love that. They love you to trample on the Constitution.
Right.
But the legislative branch, we've never had a runaway legislative branch. The legislative branch is the weakest far. They haven't declared war since World War II. It's supposed to be their constitutional authority. They did nothing when Lincoln was in office. Nobody protests anything. And the legislative branch now is just as bad as the other two, but they're the weakest. And they're the ones that are most responsive to the people, because especially the House of Representatives, you could theoretically overturn it every 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's the closest we have. And so it's, if anything, that should be the strongest of any of their strongest, but it's by far the weakest. And so we have the mess we have right now, where basically it's up to, you have these partisan politics, these two awful, putrid, you know, Republicrats that you have, the terrible woke Democrats and the woke Democrats and the stupid cucked Republicans who, you know, right. just betray people time and time again. And then you have the presidents who are, you know, can write executive orders and all the stuff that they're not supposed to be able to do constitutionally. And then you have the judicial system, which is completely politicized now and is on steroids. They literally think they can do anything, and they'll just get a good referendum up, you pass something that would help the people, throw it right out, send it to the wrong judge. And that's what we saw with Trump, the few good things he tried to do. They would go to a federal judge and he'd overturn them. And, you know, that's not the way a democracy or a constitutional republic, it's not the way it's supposed to work. So it's right now, you know, I'd be open to anything, but I don't, you know, if you're placed with a monarchy, then you have, you know, a bunch of inbreds, probably half reptilians. And I don't know if that's any kind of improvement.
Well, I mean, I want either King Alfred, I want him, or the Sun King, King Louis of France. He's on my list. I'd bring
King
him
Arthur.
Back.
How about King Arthur?
King Arthur. Maybe real. I'd bring him too.
Yeah. If he was real. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. So I wanted your take last topic before I wanted to talk about your new book, Elon Musk, Twitter. What is your take on this whole crazy situation? Because obviously we saw Elon today, like, halted his purchase. Those, I have the Project Veritas. Did you see those the Project Veritas clips?
I didn't watch them, but I saw them advertised on. I guess. So
basically, it's nerds. They have like an attractive woman, you know. So guys, if you are in a position of power and a girl way out of your league is flirting with you, she does not like you. All right. Okay, she is using you for some reason. Just have to throw that out there. But yeah, so basically, it came out. You know, like the one guy, he said how, yeah, we don't make any money. We have lost money every year. But we're an ideological company. That's our job. It's not to make money. So that was an interesting quote. But what's your take on this whole, on Musk, Twitter, all this stuff?
Well, you know, I caught some flack when it first came out, because I'm aware of Elon Musk's history. You know, I've seen the pictures of him with Ghislaine Maxwell. I've seen his mother, you know, and his wives. And I'm aware of the bizarre stuff in his background. Sure, of course. But, you know, he was saying, again, much like Trump was, he was saying the right things. He was, you know, free speech is important. So
yes.
I said, you know, I don't see how he could make Twitter worse. How could he do that? So I said, you know, if he really brings back, and I've been testing it, I don't tweet enough. But, so I've been testing, I try to be provocative in my tweets. I need to start putting Pizzagate and Sandy Hook stuff up and see what happens. But I mean, so far, you know, there are election fraud stuff or COVID stuff, you know.
Right.
But things that get you into it's so far so good. And supposedly people that were banned, they claim their accounts have been restored. I don't know. But now you're hearing stuff, maybe he won't even own it. But I said, you know, however it works, yes, he's not my idea of some kind of heroic figure. And he almost certainly is one of them. Anybody that has that kind of wealth, you know, there's got to be a great crime behind that kind of great fortune.
That's a nice quote.
Well, I think it was, was it the Balzac? I think it was the French author said, behind every great fortune lies a great crime. And I think that definitely does. And in case when it's that great of a fortune, when you're talking about one of the richest ones, billions, then something obviously is up there. But if he brings some semblance of free speech to one social media platform, even, We have one place we can go where we don't have to worry about getting banned. We can say, you know, anything we want. That's a good thing. I'm a free speech purist. Now, I'm dubious. And now hearing this stuff that maybe won't buy it, everything's pretty predictable.
Yeah.
But it did, much like Trump's stupid tweets served one good purpose. They brought the roaches out in the light. You know, it showed, you know, exactly how anti-liberty most of America is. And so just the idea that this Elon Musk's threat of bringing free speech to Twitter, you know, horrified all these people. So you saw, especially these journalists were shaking in their boots, quivering in fear at the prospect of free speech. Oh my God, you know, this is horrible. You know, a journalist. So it was very illuminating to see that. So I don't think he'll do it, but you know, hey, whatever. If you said, I would root on it. You know, Joe Biden pardoned Abraham Bolton, the Secret Service agent with the JFK assassination. And, you know, I know.
Wow.
Yeah. I said, okay, so Biden did one good thing, amazingly. You know, I don't know what possessed him to do it, but, you know, Trump didn't pardon him.
Right.
You know, so
I don't know his story.
He was the first Black Secret Service agent appointed by Kennedy. And after JFK died, he was the only one really to talk out about the Secret Service pretty much letting it happen. They railroaded him and put him in jail for a while under bogus bribery. Yep, and he was never, he's been trying to get a pardon for a long time. He's pretty old now. And to my shock, you know, Joe Biden, of all people, pardoned him. So you get the devil their due, you know, anybody that they said, if they do something, I don't care. DeSantis, you know, he's done some decent things. My governor here in Virginia, who I know is a typical rhino neocon, Youngkin.
Right.
So far, he's held pretty well. Better than anybody thought with the critical race theory stuff in the schools, which is one of the things he ran on. So I give anybody credit if they do the right thing. I don't necessarily look, you know, if Hillary Clinton, you know, came out tomorrow and demanded an investigation of the JFK assassination. Okay, well, she's right. I question why she's doing it. But I just look at it like that. You know, you support right. You support whoever, you know, does something right, although you're very dubious about why they're doing it. So Elon Musk becoming probably a gimmick. Maybe he's trying to enter politics too, and he thinks free speech is
that's fair.
Good thing to hang his hat on, and it is. But if anybody that actually brings free speech and stops canceling people, it's a good thing.
I respect your opinion. You've been studying this so long, so you've seen so many patents, you know, the CIA intelligence, they're not good with coming up with new ideas. They do the same thing, just, you know, put a new name on it. And so I respect your opinion a lot for seeing this. And then what you brought up, the journalists, how you saw they were all, I mean, it's sickening. It's truly disgusting. You think that there was ever a time in America where the press was predominantly honest, was predominantly not controlled by financial interest? Or do you think, you know, 90% for, you know, there's truth in what they say, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty much always been that way. But before you had the electronic media taking over, when it was just print media, I think it was freer, definitely, because then they had to pay a more of attention to the freedom of the press. And but what the problem began when radio was the first radio and film, you know, when those first mediums of expression that the founders couldn't have foreseen. So they really should have amended the Bill of Rights just to include, you know, the radio, television, and all future forms of communication. But instead, what they did is they created the FCC. And to regulate the airways.
Right.
And again, there was nobody that protested it. So, and you theoretically still had, you know, a free print media, you know, publishers used to publish more, you know, controversial stuff, bigger publishers. And somebody published Charles Fort in the 1920s. But, and you had like, you know, people like Harry Elmer Barnes, he's the one I credit, you know, he's the one that came up with the term court historians, which I use all the time. And this was the guy who was a typical historian who was, you know, so anti-German, he was rah-rahing World War One, but he had some kind of a sea change in the mid 1920s, and he just went 180 degrees in the other direction. But his writings, at least for a while, of, you know, basically blaming the Allies for World War One and things, they saying we were too rough on Germany. Exactly. And he had big publishers for a while. And he was still welcomed in all the, you know, the biggest organs of the mainstream media. And of course, eventually, by the time World War II especially really changed everything, because that's when they really, really shut down on the dissent, started to. And you already had radio that was, you know, the rare radio. You had Father Coughlin and people like that in the 30s that were really, they were, you know, talking about Jews and everything. They were really extreme.
Right, right.
But eventually, once World War II came along, all that stopped. And after World War II, you did not have those kinds of books that might have been published before. They were relegated to really, you know, Sons of Liberty in Louisiana, you know, presses like that. They were, you had to buy through the mill. You couldn't find these books in the library.
Right.
And newspapers, you had like the Chicago Tribune that was still kind of conservative, but they didn't, you know, it wasn't any real alternative. And of course you had the FCC regulating, so there was never, and that's why when the JFK assassination happened, then you saw first that, boy, this is going to be a lockstep. And you saw the way all the television networks reacted the same, all the print media, and you really saw, wow, there's just a real consensus of thought, because that had, you know, and again, it started with World War II.
Yeah.
World War I, not so much. There was questioning of World War I. World War II, no. They didn't have to worry about throwing a bunch, like they threw a bunch of World War I protesters in prison. World War II, nah. There was nobody, because they saw what happened to World War I protesters. So nobody protested, basically.
Right, right.
And they weren't going to tolerate it. So that,
except Jeanette Rankin.
Oh, like, wonderful. Yeah, my heroes. Oops, you know, they should put any female on the currency. That's your number one seed. But I'm sure she was never even mentioned. Yeah, it's a wonderful. Yeah, I mean, anybody that said something like, you can no more, what do you say? You can no more win a war than you could win an earthquake, I think was one of her great, which is a trip. Yeah.
Yeah. And for people, Jeanette Rankin was a congressman, Minnesota?
Was it Minnesota? I think maybe you could be right. I think so.
But regardless, she was, I think, one of like maybe the only one or one of like three that voted against both World War I and World War II.
She was the only one. In World War II, she was the only one.
Oh, wow. World War II, she was. I thought all, as in World War I, I think Lindbergh also voted no.
Yeah, Lindbergh, there was not many, but there, I forget the exact number. It might have been like 10.
Yeah, not maybe many.
But World War I, won.
And she is just so amazing that, I mean, as a woman in this time, she stood up to have the bravery to say, I mean, just so people know, just such an amazing. So you're I totally agree. If you're going to put any woman on a dollar bill or, you know, Women's History Month highlighting amazing women, she's top of the list.
She's not going to make it. No, because what was her key issue? Peace. And, you know, peace isn't popular to the left or the right. So, and she, that's the kind of people I write about in my book.
Yeah. So tell everybody about, I know you just, I just bought it before I did. We had this, I saw it. A deal on it on Kindle, $2. So you guys cannot go wrong. Just buy his book, start reading. But what's your new book?
You mean Survive the Richest you bought for Jenny?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's the, I hope you liked it. And that's a real important one now, but the latest book is about showbiz, On Borrowed Fame, Money, Mysteries, and Corruption in the Entertainment World. And a little bit of a departure for me, but not really, because I wrote a book about bullying before that, bullyocracy. I write about other things, but it's always about exposing corruption and, you know, injustice and unfairness. And in show business, there's a lot of corruption. And you have the same kind of unnatural deaths you have in the political world. There's a huge body count in the entertainment industry.
Yes.
And so it's, you know, so I go and the, and so it kind of combines what my hidden history books with the unnatural deaths and the corruption, and Survival of the Richest with the economic disparity, because you have all over the place where some of these very famous people really got ripped off. They didn't make much money. Others, you know, made $300 million. Mm-hmm. And there doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason after, like, who got screwed and why. So I'm fascinated by that stuff, and hopefully people will be too.
No, I wonder, so I saw this one, you know, there's people on Twitter, obviously they're a little, we call it like, you know, schizo posting or whatever. That's they're a little crazier, but they're enjoyable to read. And one guy brought up the connection of how, like, every celebrity, almost not every, but
the producers and these writers of these shows, oftentimes their parents were either in Hollywood or they were a politician or they were an Ivy League. And a lot of them come from these Ivy League schools. Like the example he gave was The Office. For guys, people that Ryan in The Office, he went to Harvard. His dad was someone super powerful. BJ Novak, I think that's his name. But he brought this point that, like, his, you know, he was his dad's such a powerful guy, Ivy League. And there's just so many examples of this, people that write influential shows that their parents come from. So if you could elaborate on that, I'd love to hear.
Well, and that's really more, you know, Survival of the Richest. I go over that a lot, and I have a whole section. Actually, you know, I think they actually cut that out of the published version. So you might have to go to my blog. My blog is at donaldjeffers.news and search for it under, because I have deleted chapters from Hidden History and Survival of the Richest.
Oh my God. I didn't know that. I've been there, but I never know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's, you can find it, because I thought it was the best chapter in the book and they cut it out. I don't think they're afraid of being sued or whatever, but I just went over all the celebrities and from, you know, the entertainment world, the political world, business, high profile CEOs. And I just looked at, and I by no means was it, you know, extensive as it could have been. There's tons and tons of other examples I could have given, but virtually almost every case, every one of these people, if they became famous in the high profile occupation, they started out in life at least upper middle class. Most of the time they started out very wealthy. I mean, tons and tons of people in Hollywood, even old Hollywood, their, you know, fathers were judges or U.S. senators. Atul the Bankhead's father was a Speaker of the House of Representatives, you know, doctors, things like, you know, Humphrey Bogart was raised with a silver spoon in his mouth. He was like a baby model. His mother was a, you know, high profile figure when mothers weren't working, which is later Bill Gates. You know, Bill Gates' mother was sitting on the boards of directors of banks and corporations back in the 50s and 60s.
When I didn't know that. Wow.
His father was president of Planned Parenthood too.
I saw that.
And he had, you know, bank presidents as grandparents, and he was some middle class. That's a special breed of middle class there. But if he's middle class,
I gotta change my groupings.
Yeah, the rest of us are in poverty. But you can find tons of examples there, and I list them, you know, a bunch of them, and it just to show you again that's the theme of Survival of the Rich is the system is rigged. There's almost no upward mobility, and I have tons and tons of statistics in there to show that. It's basically the sad, and this was before the COVID narrative hit and the unconstitutional lockdown, which just made everything, you know, way worse. And already was bad, but even before that, it was almost a rule of thumb, unless you're like, you could play sports, and you know, maybe sports are to a lesser degree entertainment. And that really, most of that only plays to the black audience, because a lot of them were disproportionately poor. But general rule of thumb, that is, if you start out in life poor, you're pretty much going to die poor. You might get have a little bit more money, but you're not going to raise up. You might go up one quadrille. So if you're in the bottom quadrille, you might go up to the next to the bottom quadrille.
Right. Yeah.
Start out middle class, you might go up one quadrille again, maybe. And if you're wealthy, you're not going to go down. It's impossible. And you probably, I mean, you could be a screw up. A lot of the sons and daughters of the one percenters, you know, they resent it. They're messed up, you know, I mean, raised by nannies, they turn to drugs or, you know, things like that. So a lot of times they go through their monies, their parents play a tough love with them. So some of them don't end up, well, it's because of that. If they play the game and don't do that, they're going to be wealthy, even wealthier probably. So, you know, if people like, you know, Bill Gates started out, he got wealthier. Donald Trump, you know, was the son of a millionaire, became a billionaire. So, you know, as Gerald Talenti likes to say, you know, these guys, they start out on third base, like start out in life in third base, they think they hit a home run.
Yeah.
You know, and that's basically the way it is. The system is rigged, and it's sad but true. I mean, that's just, you know, I wish it wasn't, but there are very few. Even when you look at like really good looking actresses in Hollywood, you figure, well, okay, maybe they were runaways, and they were, you know, obviously some producer wanted to have sex with them.
Right.
But even most of them came from successful families. Most of them. Not all, but most of them did. So even that way, you know, they they could be sexy and whatever, and be, but they still, you know, usually needed to start out from a good economic foothold.
Right. No, I totally agree. I mean, I there's exceptions to every rule, but as general, it seems that all these people are very connected.
Yes.
And they're just running a whole scam on all of us because they, and I always thought about this too. Like, people say, oh, they're such a good actor. I feel like acting, I look at acting, I'm like, I feel like I could do that too. Like, you know, yeah. This isn't too challenging. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to act.
Right.
But yeah. There had to be something more at play that besides skill of acting and who gets hired for jobs. And
sure. Like, and they make those, you know, when I was, the first thing I want, well, yeah, I always wanted to be some kind of writer, but when I was a teenager, I was writing songs all the time. I really wanted to be like a singer songwriter.
Right.
And, so I didn't even have an extensive recording, but I had a friend that has really good equipment and just something like Echoplex. I don't know if they still use that, but you know, like he made a tape of me where they put the Echoplex on it, sweetens and, you know, maybe sound completely different, mm-hmm. you know, and it maybe sound a lot better.
Right.
And, so they can do that stuff with almost anybody. Because almost anybody can sing. I mean, they can't carry a tune, maybe.
Yeah.
But there's a way electronically to sweeten it. And they've been doing that for a very long time. And, you know, they basically, you know, we saw that with Milli Vanilli. You remember back in the 90s where they literally found out they weren't singing. They didn't sing at all. They were destroyed. Yeah, their careers were destroyed. But, I mean, and I'm sure they're not the only ones.
Yeah.
I would, you know, I don't know. The Katy Perrys of the world. I don't know how good maybe they can really sing, but, yeah, so there's a lot of that out there, and it's. But I agree with you in terms of acting, and I've seen tons of actors like, yeah, I think I could do a better job than that too. But you know, it is what it, I mean. You know, people, even classic acts like Marlon Brando, I never got him. You know, James Dean, especially, he's mumbling constantly, and brooding. It's like I don't get it. You know, I guess maybe it was appealing at the time. I don't know.
Right. All right. I know we're almost done. Last topic. What is your take on what's going on in Russia and Ukraine? I would love your, because I'm just my point of view is every war has been funded on both sides by the bankers since Civil War, maybe not the Boer War, but everything else. They played both sides against the middle. So what is your take, though, on what's going on? Where is this leading? Is this a psyop for hunger strikes? What is it?
Well, you know, Yeah, of course, obviously, I think it's none of our business. And I told people early on, I said, look, just from the quotes I've heard from Vladimir Putin from alternative media, I don't know if they're true or not, but he's saying better stuff than our politicians. You know, he wants to arrest the Rothschilds. He banned GMO foods. He said the government killed Kennedy, you know, according to these quotes. I don't know. I don't speak Russian.
Right.
But so if they're accurate, that's true. But you know, but I said, I don't care if Putin's a good guy or a bad guy. It's irrelevant to me. I don't care. Either way, I feel the same way that this is none of our business. Our country's crumbling and falling apart. We need to take care of this first. But then you get into the hoaxy aspect of it. And you have Bono, you know, real suspect. This is a guy that runs the One Foundation that it was exposed that 1.2% of the money that's donated to his foundation goes to causes. Is a 98.8% overhead, completely worthless foundation. Didn't shame him at all. Didn't stop the foundation. He's still going. He's still pontificating everywhere, and you know, he's basically an Illuminati member posing as an alleged rock star. He's posing with George W. Bush and stuff like that. But anyhow, he goes over and does a benefit concert in the war zone.
Yeah,
I say, how does that work? This is a war, and you see all these world leaders flying in and out of the war zone. So they're in the middle of this alleged fighting. And I posted something today, I think it was today, where I found this statement by Orwell, who of course I love. And when Orwell was a journalist covering the war in Spain, and he talks about how he personally saw everyone, these battles, these bloody battles being reported that were never fought. And this is, you're talking about a century ago.
Yeah.
And this guy he wasn't writing fiction. He was covering it as a journalist. And the whole thing, if you read the whole thing, I said, it sounds like he's talking about hoaxes.
Interesting.
And that was then, 100 years ago. So I don't even know how much of this stuff is real. Mm-hmm. But they've already had footage caught there where they said, well, no, actually, that was from 10 years ago. And and you see that everywhere. We saw that during the pandemic. So, you know, there's a Truman Show aspect to all this. I don't even know. And you have the idea that this comedian who was on playing the Ukrainian president on TV, and now he's become the savior of Hollywood.
Right.
Where they just in love with this guy, and they didn't blink when he banned all opposition political parties, and they still say we're fighting for democracy. What kind of democracy, you know, doesn't allow any opponents? So, I don't know, man, but I'm with Benjamin Franklin. He said there's never been such a thing as a good war or a bad peace. So I'm always against war, always for peace, and especially when it's that far away, even if it's real, even if Putin is the boogeyman, I don't care. It's none of our business. America is crumbling, falling apart everywhere, literally falling apart. And you're sending $40 billion over there. It's
sickening. Sickening. Yeah.
Yes,
well, where can, how can people find your work? All those good things, Don. Everyone loves when you're on the show. So I just want to let you know that, but where can you find you?
Well, DonaldJeffries.media is where you can find my writings on Substack. And that's going to be my website. My friend, Tony Arneberner, produces my I Protest radio show on Fridays at live streams there over rockfin.com. He's paid for the website. He's such a nice guy. He supports me so much. So DonaldJeffries.media is the URL to remember, because that's going to be my website shortly, and you'll be able to find links to everything there. Right now, though, you go there, you can find my Substack, which I'm writing on regularly. I have a pay option there, and some people are paying, even though I offer everything for free. You know, some people help me that way, so it's great. But I'm getting a pretty good following there, and I have the Donald Jeffries Show, which is every Wednesday. That's on Ocelli.com. Jeff Rentz, his big network, he rebroadcasts every Donald Jeffries show like four times. And it also goes out to radio stations on a delayed basis, but probably at 3 a.m. I don't know. So if you somehow have that radio station to listen to, but you can listen to that. And then I Protest again, it's Fridays. And I'm on Jeff Rentz every Mondays at 9 o'clock. You can hear me a lot of places. You can read me a lot of places. It's, you know, you probably find out more than you want to know if you search for me.
No, man, you are you're a pillar of this truth or community. And so I'll put like your website and stuff in the show notes. And everybody, thanks for listening. Great time in the chat. Thanks to Don. And we'll talk soon, everybody. Take care.